Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning and move over Anita Hill, because now we have Christine Blaisley Ford. Remember that name, Christine Blaisley Ford.
We'll forget about it by next week.
Well, will we? Confirmation hearing, or the vote's supposed to be taking place this Thursday.
Maybe delayed. Jeff Flake wants it delayed. By the way, my name is Bruce Wolf.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi.
Hi, how
Forget
are you?
Forget my, excuse my manners. I'm lacking manners today because I couldn't sleep last night because of this. For some reason,
really?
I don't know why, or maybe it's because I was going to see you today, Bruce.
Well, I couldn't sleep because of A, U, and B, that Viking-Packer game. Oh, my goodness. Went into overtime.
Did somebody win as opposed
Nobody
to the
won. They
Steelers-Browns game? What is this, soccer again? Well, we'll talk about that. We'll also discuss when you're going to Vontae Davis me and walk out. Maybe around the 7 a.m. hour?
Right when
you'll just decide to leave.
When Chet Coppock comes on, I'm walking out. He's a guest of ours today.
Oh, he is. He'll be here at 7:35. Oh, great show. Keith Conrad, our executive producer, really outdid himself. We have Ken Starr here.
Oh, my goodness.
At 8:05. What are you going to wear? I was going to change into my blue dress.
I was going to say, I did not have sex
and
with
then
that woman.
The former New York PD, New York commissioner, is going to be here as well.
What are we going to talk to him about?
He's got a new book, and he's always got something to say. He'll make news. Okay.
I thought we were going to go Christine
all
the time.
24, the whole time? No, not the whole
Move
time.
Move over Florence.
All right, here's the
Christine's taking over the front page. It's a cat fight between Christine and Florence now.
But what about Maria?
How do you solve a problem like Maria? There was that whole dispute, too, over the number of deaths.
All right, so here's what happened. Christine Blaisley Ford wrote a confidential letter to Senator Democratic lawmaker alleging that Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her more than three decades ago, about 32 years ago. So they were at this...
35, I think.
35. All right, you do the math. They were high school...
Although she doesn't know.
They were high school students in suburban Maryland, and she said that she went upstairs to go to the bathroom, and that's when she got cornered into a room by Kavanaugh and his friend, whose last name is Judge. She said that basically he pinned her down. He was stumbling drunk and clumsily attempted to pull off her one-piece bathing suit and the clothing she wore over it. She tried to scream, she said, but then he put his hand over her mouth. And that's when she said, quote, "I thought he might inadvertently kill me. He was trying to attack me and remove my clothing." Ford said she was able to escape when Kavanaugh's friend and classmate at Georgetown Preparatory School, Mark Judge, jumped on top of them, sending all three of them tumbling. She said she ran from the room, briefly locked herself in the bathroom, and then fled the house. It's a detailed article. She went on to say that she does not remember whose house she was at and how she got to the home or how she got home.
Uh-oh, I see your eyes squinting over that. Let the record show.
Well, if I was, attacked ever in my life, no matter what stage of my life it was in, I would remember where I was.
Yeah.
We had that woman on who was kidnapped and sexually assaulted. She knew where she was. She was in a Browns Trans Am that had she was aware of her surroundings.
Usually with a traumatic event, you remember all the little details. Like, for me, the biggest trauma was seeing The Exorcist.
Uh-huh.
And I remember what I was wearing that day, this red checked shirt. But you think you remember where and when it was. Also, the afterwards... she said she didn't tell a therapist for, till 2012. I understand not going to a therapist for a number of years because a lot of times these things don't kick in for a number of decades. But you usually tell a friend.
Right.
That
and she
something
didn't
happened.
Go to
and
that.
She didn't tell a friend.
But she didn't go to that house party, or it was the three of them, whatever, with any girlfriends. And I found that strange. But what she did do, well, her therapist did take notes. And yes. the therapist notes that she handed over to the Washington Post, right. which I would never want my therapist to take notes of any of my sessions. Well, I used to.
Crazy?
I still do. Well, we're all crazy.
Tell me about it.
Oh, please. But when your therapist starts taking notes, isn't that when you change therapists?
What?
But anyway, so she had the notes.
Can't
but
a therapist take notes?
She didn't.
What's the yellow legal pad
for? I've never, ever, ever seen a therapist taking notes ever in my life. Maybe they do after you leave, but not in my presence. No way.
Well, they've got it. They get bored and their eyes roll up in their head and they start sketching things.
In the therapist's notes, there's no mention ever of the name Kavanaugh. However, her husband has come forward saying that she remembers during one of the sessions that she mentioned his name, Kavanaugh.
Well, of course, but that's her husband. Here's the thing. The therapist is not a news reporter. The therapist is taking down what he or she finds relevant. Maybe she didn't say the name or the name wasn't relevant. I see people like David French, who's going to be a guest on this show tomorrow, and he's a National Review writer and a lawyer, and I respect a lot of what he says, but he makes a big deal out of the fact that the notes seem contradictory, and they're not, really. I think they can be reconciled. It's you don't have one of the facts is when she talked to the therapist 6 years ago, was she, according to the therapist, there were four boys there. She mm-hmm. says there were four boys at the party total, only two in the room. So I mean, the therapist is taking little chicken scratch notes that are relevant to him or her. It's not for a report on the evening news later. So well, that doesn't bother me so much. I don't see anything contradictory there. What does bother me is that she didn't tell somebody. As you mentioned, she doesn't remember where or when it was. This was such a traumatic event. Usually you would remember that.
Well,
and she didn't tell anybody else.
Was it track housing? Was it a mansion? Was it in the nice side of town? Was it in the middle class side of town? Well, anything.
It leads me
she
to
was
believe
hanging
that
out with
maybe
kids
she was
from
drunk,
a,
too.
Well, no, she was.
She didn't say she was drunk. She said she had one beer.
Okay.
She says one beer.
One beer.
Yeah.
She also took a lie detector test.
Who gave her the lie detector test?
She went with a reporter from the Washington Post. Yep.
No, but who gave the lie detector test?
I don't know who administered.
Somewhere I
no,
read
I know.
That it was somebody who was associated with the Clinton administration. I'm not sure about that. But what was the question that was asked in the lie detector test? And why aren't lie detector tests admissible in court?
Well, Christine Ford's a professor at Palo Alto University. She's a published professor. She passed the... I mean, she's a person of the community there. And
she's also a liberal and Democrats and donates to Democratic causes.
But this doesn't feel right for me. This does not sit well. I think that Kavanaugh's in trouble.
No, well, yeah, I think he's in trouble, too. Now,
and here's the thing. They only need one Republican to have a no vote, just one. And all of a sudden, you've got Bob Corker and Jeff Flake who want to have phone discussions with her.
It may not
and
get out of
Kavanaugh.
Committee. It's an 11-10 vote right now. May not get out of committee. Jeff Flake wants hearings. I mean, I don't know what hearings are going to do or what a discussion is
going
to do.
Well, this is what's happening
right
this today. They're arranging staff phone calls with her and with Kavanaugh. So the big question is the Kavanaugh nomination in jeopardy? 312-642-5600 is our Turnkey DepPro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. One reporter was able to catch up with Lisa Murkowski. Yeah. At the airport last night.
If there are more questions that need to be asked and answered, then I think it would be appropriate to allow for that time.
You know, can I ask the threshold question?
Sure.
This happened when he was 17 years old.
And she was 15.
And I know that, and he was drunk, and he was, and it may be that he doesn't honestly remember it happening because he was stumbling drunk at the time. And his friend doesn't remember it either, and it may have actually happened. But even assuming arguendo that it did happen, I mean, he's 17 years old. What if he's lived a good life for the last 35 years? So we're going to condemn people because of that? Norm McDonald.
Well, is it a youthful discretion?
Norm McDonald.
Youthful indiscretion, excuse me.
Either one. Norm McDonald last week got into trouble because he said, you can't even apologize nowadays because you're doomed if you apologize. So you got to deny. You've got to lie. I mean, and in a sense, Kavanaugh would have to continue to lie because he's had like five FBI checks over the years. So he's obviously, if it was truthful and he wants to apologize, he can't because he lied to the FBI over all those times? Because that, they obviously cover, you know, did you ever do anything bad? And he said no. And when he did. So.
Your phone call's coming up, 312-642-5600.
Like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right. I do have to tell you that the lie detector test, this is where it came from. So she engaged Deborah Katz. She's a Washington lawyer, and she's worked on sexual harassment cases. Mm-hmm. And Katz said, take a polygraph test. So Ford took a polygraph test administered by a former FBI agent.
Sure.
And that happened in
Associated
August.
With whom? I mean, who, you know, was the FBI?
So the results,
know, is compromised.
Which Katz provided to the Washington Post, concluded that Ford was being truthful when she said a statement summarizing her allegations was accurate.
But interesting. Listen to that question. How about did it happen? That wasn't the question. I mean,
I could have. I'm sure it something happened to this woman, but was it Kavanaugh and his friend? His friend, Mark Judge.
Not Mike Judge, who came up with King of the Hill.
Stumbling drunk with, and who was allegedly watching this before piling on, and then they all three stumbled out the door and went their merry ways. He's a recovering alcoholic. He wrote a book about it.
Right, called God and Man at Georgetown Prep, which, of course, is a play on William F. Buckley's
God and Man at Yale. A moment of silence for William F. Buckley.
You know that Dan actually had dinner with William F. Buckley?
Here we go. Okay, let's take your phone calls. 312-642-5600. Let's go to Robert, who joins us from Oak Brook. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Amy, you mentioned something that's crucial. Did you say she was 15 at the time?
Yes, she was.
Underage.
And he was 17.
Okay, well, No. So, again, we have to go. We were talking 1984. So go all the way back to when you were 15 and you were at a party, and I'm sure you might have been, and your parents said, how many beers did you have? And you said, I only had one.
She's lying about how many beers she had.
Oh, that's right. The old I only had one excuse.
But she's lying.
One means five.
That's sex partners for women, right? Go ahead.
What I'm saying is, I'm sure something crucially happened to this woman, and it's been buried somehow. But there's too many questions. One, why didn't you bring this out when he was going to become a regular federal judge? Why didn't you bring it out? So now in 2012, now it comes out. It's going to be he said, she said type of situation. But there's got to be money behind this.
Why? There doesn't have to be money. Robert, you're so suspicious.
Well, here's the thing. She came out to the Washington Post. They've been working on her to try to tell her to have her come forward. And she had a reporter from BuzzFeed in front of her house. And she said she just decided that she wants to own this story because it was her identity was leaking. Thanks, Robert, for the phone call. So that's why she came forward. But Senator Grassley even said he's questioning the timing of this.
Well, here, you know, John Podhoretz made an interesting comment yesterday on Twitter. He looks at the culture of the time. And if you watch Revenge of the Nerds, which is out around that time, there was a relationship between the characters Lewis and Betty, which is similar to what happens here, only that was considered raunchy fun. Our mores have changed right now. We're in the Me Too moment, and everything, you know, we look at things through a much more jaundiced eye than we did back then. So, I mean, you have to take that into account, too, how different we look at things.
Well, and then in the New Yorker report, they said that he covered her mouth so she couldn't cry out and that he and another male had turned up the music so no one could hear what was going on.
But here's one thing. Why does Judge jump on the pile? It has a prankish quality
True.
To it, as Ala Pundit noted. So it's not necessarily, you know, it's all how you cast it and
he's grinding his body against mine and clumsily attempting to
and he's
pull off for one piece bathing
suit. He's drunk
and
he's out of it and they're practically blacking out. I mean, that's how bad it is.
Let's go to Mark, who joins us from the South Side. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Well, my initial response was going to be about the polygraph, but since you mentioned that, my next thought is this is a carbon copy of what they did in Alabama with Moore. What's the difference between
except Roy Moore Alabama was definitely guilty.
It worked in Alabama.
Yeah, but Roy Moore was guilty.
Roy Moore had multiple accusers. This is just one woman claiming something that happened when she was 15 years old and he was 17 years old.
We'll see if there are. It would be strong evidence if there's somebody else over the years. But you know, it goes back to my threshold question. He was 17 at the time, and he's lived an exemplary life since then. It's Norm Macdonald said, you can't apologize for an indiscretion or something bad when you were some kind of crazy teenager. You are condemned for life.
Well, both men deny that this ever happened.
Well, they could have been drunk and don't even remember. Judge says, in his latest iteration, said he has no recollection of this. Saying no recollection means you don't remember it happening. I mean, you should just flat out say it did not happen.
Well, why don't they just say she's pinpointing the wrong guys? I mean, are there other prep school kids around in suburban Maryland at that time?
No. I mean, I think it's a plausible story that she has. I mean, the biggest hole is that she didn't tell anybody about it. Forget the therapist at the time. And she doesn't remember where and when it was. And you think for a trauma, you'd remember that.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Listen to podcasts of Joe Walsh and Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good Monday morning. Amy Jacobson here. Bruce Wolf filling in for Dan Proft on a very busy news day, of course. The Kavanaugh hearing, his nomination in jeopardy. We'll be talking about that on and off throughout the morning. Ken Starr joins us at 8:05 to talk about Manafort's plea deal and what it means for the Trump investigation or for the Russian investigation.
I already feel like I'm going to be deposed by Ken Starr.
Do you?
I did not have sex with any woman ever.
Okay. And of course, today's a big day that another Daily is going to announce that he's running for mayor. It's not enough that we had the dad and the brother. Now we want Bill Daly.
Aren't there any other families other than the Clintons, the Bushes,
and the Manigans,
and the Dalys, who are basically the Kennedys without a drowning? I mean,
we'll talk to our good friend Marianne Ahern at 7:05. But the storm is still wreaking havoc in the region. Hurricane Florence, 18 people have died, including a 3-month-old baby who died last night when a tree fell on their mobile home. Here's his mother.
They've been doing CPR for the last 30 minutes. And they just wanted permission to stop. Said no at first, but after another 30 minutes, he wouldn't come back.
What was she still doing there? Was this the one where the husband wanted to stay there?
No, that was, so we had a 3-month-old just die. That was the 18th victim. On Friday, a mother and her 7-month-old were killed when a tree fell on their house.
And what were they still doing?
In Wilmington, North Carolina. And the firefighters, I don't know if you saw the video, they all took a knee in prayer. And we're praying because they tried to rescue her. Well, there wasn't water, impending rushing water. The ground was so saturated that all these large trees were just falling over into people's houses.
How do you take a knee when the water is 3 feet
They
deep?
Weren't. I said there was no water there.
The water
was
no saturated.
No, that's why they didn't flee. But a lot of people, you know, I kept saying too, they're telling you to get out. But there's a reason why people aren't leaving.
We would go if there was somewhere to go. But if we leave and go to town, we'd be living in a van.
And water, you know, there's price gouging right now. There was looting on Friday. Price gouging for hotels, for gasoline, long lines for gasoline. And in the midst of it all, you know, you have this one mayor saying, if you don't leave, you better tell your next of kin.
Well, we have a lot of people that are complying, but we wanted to make sure that they didn't take this lightly and they didn't become complacent by what they saw or could see, because these situations can change quite rapidly. But yeah, I wanted to make sure that they understood the message loud and clear that if you decide to stay, please make sure that your next of kin is notified of what your choices are. Because if you are in a situation of a life-threatening event, that help may not be available or will not be available.
Well, that's a strong message from Mayor Mitch Colvin. So the water levels are rising. It's still raining in Wilmington, North Carolina. It hasn't stopped since I've seen you on
Friday.
But
it's now just a severe depression, which I believe is what Christine Ford went into after 2012. Got to tie it all in.
Stop it. Okay. The question is, though, President Trump is going to make it all better. He's visiting.
Do I hear 25 deaths? Oh, my gosh. Maria.
So
do I hear 3,000?
He tweeted out, when the death toll was at 12, he tweeted out, 5 deaths have been recorded thus far with regard to Hurricane Florence. Deepest sympathies and warmth go out to the families and friends of the victims. May God be with them. But considering what he said about Puerto Rico, do you think he should even go visit the survivors of Hurricane Florence? 312-642-5600 is our Trinky DePro answer line. 646-36, type in D8, then a quick comment. Well, he was denying the death toll in Puerto Rico from Hurricane Maria.
You know what? I remember on Friday when we were criticizing him, and even Brett Baer joined in and saying, why is he talking like this when the studies show? Well, actually, he may be on to something. This George Washington University study that said that there were 3,000 deaths, what it does is it uses a new methodology. It takes into account the people who supposedly left the island and how many of those supposedly died to add to the total. But the problem is...
What's the problem?
As Julie Kelly notes in American Greatness, local gal, Julie Kelly from Orland Park, she notes that, first of all, they never used this methodology before. But secondly, nobody really knows how many people left the island. The estimates were that 300,000 people left the island. There's really not definitive documentation on that.
The relatives I have there through marriage left the island.
What
but
about
they
the ones
die,
not
but
through
they
marriage?
Came back.
How about the ones on your side?
Well, here's the thing. Brock Long, director of FEMA. Is with you.
You know, one thing about President Trump is that he is probably the one president that has had more support for what goes on back here. And I think he's defensive because he knows how hard these guys behind me work day in and day out for a very complex situation. And it's frustrating. Those studies, the Harvard study was done differently than the George Washington study or this study or that study. And the numbers are all over the place.
But he tweeted out that Democrats, you know, screwed with the numbers to make him look bad. And that's exactly what Chuck Todd asked him yesterday on Meet the Press.
I mean, he said Democrats did it to make him look bad. Do you believe any of these studies were done to make the president look bad?
Well, I mean, I don't think the studies, I don't know why the studies were done. I mean, I think what we're trying to do, in my opinion, what we've got to do is figure out why people die from direct deaths, which is the wind, the water, and the waves, buildings collapsing, which is probably where the 65 number came from. And then there's indirect deaths. So the George Washington study looked at what happened 6 months after the fact. And, you know, what happens is, and even in this event, you might see more deaths indirectly occur as time goes on because people have heart attacks due to stress. They fall off their house trying to fix their roof. They die in car crashes because they went through an intersection where the stoplights weren't working.
And they factored all of that into their study.
Well, and they don't necessarily, then it went into like January and February after the hurricane, which happened in September. And normally they don't go into those months. But so what? I mean, it's only Trump, who's such a narcissistic twit, that he's got
you voted for him.
And I'll vote for him again. I mean, because he's given me Brett Kavanaugh, maybe.
Well, but Gorsuch. We've got that at least.
Yeah,
we'll always
more
have Gorsuch. You know, remember, and his lovely wife, Louise, sitting behind him in the confirmation hearing.
That you know the wives' names.
She was there. They were so cute. They couldn't stop touching each other.
Here's the thing. Remember when the Never Trumpers on our side said, oh, you can't trust Trump? Mm-hmm. Because he's not even going to come through with the Supreme Court nominees. Well, he's come through. Okay.
And notice
and
this
if
morning,
Kavanaugh doesn't, we're going to give you Amy Coney Barrett, and we're going to shove the reversal of Roe versus Wade down your throat, Democrats. Sorry.
I'm lost. Wow. Okay.
Stop the show. Amy's lost.
I'm lost. I'm going to Vontae
Davis. No, but anyway,
Davis,
whoever this FEMA head is, Kelly LeBrock or...
No, his name is Brock Long.
Yeah, Kathy Brock.
And he looks like a Brock Long. I'm Brock Long.
Yeah, and he's,
I'm in
he's
charge.
He's got a southern accent, so I don't trust him anyway. But what he says is true. Hey. It's true. It's true that you can't count all these different things that you counted before. But the problem is it's... Okay, maybe it wasn't 3,000 who died. Maybe it's 2,000. Why Trump has to be so sensitive about it and hurt himself with women, okay? Because that's what he does when he tweets like this. You know that Trump, 62%, it's like a 62-27 split among women. Men favor him 50-42. But we're going to lose the House because of Trump's alienation of suburban women. Now, getting back to Christine Ford stuff, everybody's saying, oh,
Hey, if they don't get rid of Brett Kavanaugh, it's going to hurt the Republicans with women. I don't think the Republicans are going to be hurt any more than they already are with women. So go for it. Double down on Brett Kavanaugh.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line. What do you think? Should President Trump visit survivors of Hurricane Florence? And what do you think about the numbers? Let's go to John, who joins us from Portage Park. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Amy. I just wanted to know if they changed the numbers on the World Trade Towers was around 3,000, if I'm correct. I think about that much have died since then from the cleanup. Why don't they change that number?
A lot from mesothelioma and getting the lungs. And thank you.
Remember, Amy, after 9/11, that a lot of these firefighters, these first responders, left their wives and took up with the wives of their fallen comrades? Did that actually happen? I think it was a phenomenon that actually did occur.
Are you a chick? I think Keith died a little inside right now. That's our executive producer. Let's go to Scott.
Am I a chick?
Yeah, let's go to Scott, who joins us from the West Side. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Bruce and Amy. You two are both Trump haters, and I don't think that you should ever be together on the show again.
Wait a minute, Scott. Scott, I demur.
The numbers from the hurricane from Puerto Rico were totally fabricated and made up and based on computer models, the same computer models that they use for global warming. And they're just inaccurate. And Trump needs to set the record straight, and I approve of his tweets that he's doing it, because people need to know the truth.
Scott, can I ask a question?
The real question should be is, why was this study done? What was the purpose of the study? The purpose of the study was to make Trump look bad. That was it.
I believe there's some truth to that, Scott.
Scott, can I ask you a question? Are you, A, an expert on global warming, and, B, an expert on methodologies used to determine the number of deaths from a hurricane? Are you an expert?
Yes, I am.
Okay, then that's enough. That's good enough for me.
Opinion on global warming, it doesn't exist.
All right, thanks, Scott, for
Thank
the phone
you,
call. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Coming up next, fake news. The Weather Channel kind of stepped in it. We'll explain.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
All right, so I'm a sucker for weather coverage. I love watching reporters in hurricanes. I'll admit it. Sometimes, you know, we even said this on Friday. You wish a 2x4 would come off and level a reporter, just hit him in the face,
yeah.
You know.
Or just, you know, like a stray straw that's going like 100 miles an hour and just impale them right in the throat.
Yeah, and then Ginger Z, our girlfriend on Good Morning America, she was, you know,
former colleague of ours.
Yes, but she was right there in the eye of the storm, and some floorboards were popping up, right?
Yeah, and people were criticizing her, like, you know, you've got a family, what are you doing? And she said, you know, I'm in a safe situation, so. Yeah.
And her first love is weather. That's her first baby.
Okay. Well, you got to make priorities.
Yeah, and the Weather Channel this morning is standing firm, backing a reporter who seemed on the brink of getting blown away. His name's Mike Sedell, and you can hear it for yourself and just imagine him. He's bracing, you know, fighting against the wind, just trying to maintain his footing on wet grass.
Okay, picking it up here in Wilmington, North Carolina, right at the Intracoastal, and we're in one of these bands. This is about as nasty as it's been. We had some bands like this last night, and then the eyewall this morning, we were not on TV. It was a dark and raucous night at the hotel.
Oh, the dark and raucous night.
It's horrible. But what was happening behind him?
Well, that's funny you should ask, because two boys in shorts walked with ease. There's no struggle. Walking behind him like, hey, yeah, where do you want to go for lunch? Oh, I don't know. Where do you want to do?
Yeah.
And it is the funniest thing, because he's, you know, in this.
Right, he's bracing himself.
He's bracing, like he's going to.
He's at a 45-degree angle. They're just sashaying behind him. But there was a defense presented by the Weather Channel, which is a horrible defense.
Well, they had an explanation. They said, quote, it's important to note that the two individuals in the background are walking on concrete, and Mike Sedell is trying to maintain his footing on wet grass.
I'm walking on
after
sunshine.
After reporting on air until 1 a.m. this morning, and it's undoubtedly exhausted. So He was exhausted and on wet grass.
So in other words, he was just falling asleep. That's why he was at a 45 degree
And they said,
angle.
You know, sometimes, you know, you check out Mike's pants, you do see pretty strong gusts. So the gusts were 28 to 45 miles per hour. But that's 45 miles per hour. That's child's play in Chicago.
Well, it's a four club wind. I mean, it's pretty difficult. But yeah, it does look like there's a wind machine on him.
Right.
And the guys behind him, there's nothing. So it's, maybe, is that like a microburst of wind right there? I don't know. I don't know.
And now here's Ollie Williams with the Blackie weather forecast. Ollie?
It's going to rain.
Thanks, Ollie.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Big news day here. Amy Jacobson, Dan Proft is off, and Bruce Wolf is filling in on this day when we learn about Kavanaugh's alleged accuser. She spoke yesterday with the Washington Post, and what she had to say could affect the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Kavanaugh.
Could delay it.
Could delay it. Christine Blasey Ford. Well, could kill it, could delay it. They're supposed to vote on Thursday. Charles Grassley, who's in charge, the senator from Iowa, said that he plans, as of right now, to still cast take the vote on Thursday. But there's other Republicans, Corker and Flake, who want to talk via the telephone with Christine Blasey Ford and with Kavanaugh himself.
Blasey,
I'm sorry.
And Murkowski and Collins, of course, aren't going to let this
they
go
cannot,
by without...
They just need, the Democrats need to turn one Republican senator. And here's Lisa Murkowski, who made a comment late last night.
If there are more questions that need to be asked and answered, then I think it would be appropriate to allow for that time.
Is the Kavanaugh nomination in jeopardy? 312-642-5600 is our turnkey DAP Pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. One person texted, Kavanaugh is toast, so Republicans should go to number two on the list immediately.
Amy Coney Barrett, who will be worse for the Democrats because she's pro-life. And this is what Trump gets for going for an Ivy League guy. He wanted an Ivy League guy, and this
well,
is what
not,
he gets.
No.
And now he's going to get a Notre Dame grant.
By all accounts, Kavanaugh is a respectable man.
No,
well,
apparently
well
not.
Well-liked
because
in his community. No, up until this. So the 4 days before the vote on Thursday, this Feinstein on Friday sent a letter to the FBI, which, by the way, they're not investigating. They're sitting on this letter. And the woman came forward yesterday because now she wants to tell her story. So this is her story. Back in 1982, she was 15. Kavanaugh was 17. She said that Kavanaugh and his friend forced her into, or they corralled her into a bedroom during a gathering at a teenager's house in Montgomery County, Maryland. While his friend watched, she said, Kavanaugh pinned her to a bed on her back and groped her over her clothes, grinding his body against hers and clumsily attempting to pull off her one-piece bathing suit and the clothing she wore over it. When she tried to scream, she said he put his hand over her mouth. And she said, quote, I thought he might inadvertently kill me. Eventually, his friend Mark Judge jumped on top of them, sending all three tumbling, she said. And then she ran from the room, briefly locked herself in the bathroom, and then fled the house. Now, all of this came out when she went to marriage counseling back in 2012 with her husband, couples therapy, and the therapist took notes, which were provided by Ford, that she handed over to the Washington Post. Now, the notes did not mention Kavanaugh's name, but say she reported that she was attacked by students from an elitist boys' school, and somebody who went on to become highly respected and high-ranking member of society in Washington. Her husband, Russell Ford, said that during the therapy sessions that he remembers hearing her say Kavanaugh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and there's questions about, you know, what she said, and then, of course, what the therapist took down. The therapist is not a reporter, so I can understand the notes being different. I mean, her story sounds plausible. My suggestion is that Kavanaugh, yeah, he may be telling the truth that it didn't happen because he was supposedly, according to her, stumbling drunk. So he might not actually remember that it happened, and Judge wouldn't remember it either.
He vehemently denies this ever happened,
yeah, okay.
And says his friend Mark Judge. And then on Friday, a group of women who knew Brett in high school sent a letter of support to Senator Grassley and Feinstein.
Which is irrelevant. It doesn't
matter.
Well,
say, you know, 65 women saying that he's an outstanding man. We knew Brett in high school, and he was respectful then as he is now.
Yeah, that's nice. And, it's important that there be no subsequent acts. And if there aren't any, it's going to be redound to his benefit. My suggestion, though, is that if it did happen, I would just simply lie about it and say that it didn't. Just like I think Clarence Thomas was probably lying, too. But remember, Elena Kagan, who now sits on the Supreme Court of the United States, absolutely, positively lied during her hearings to become Solicitor General when she said that she did not find a federal right to gay marriage. And, of course, just a couple of years later, the circumstances not having changed at all, she voted in favor of gay marriage. So she's a freaking liar.
How this
Elena
all started,
Kagan.
Okay, let's stay focused. How this all started is Christine Blasey, am I getting her middle name right?
Blasey.
Let's just call her Christine Ford.
Yeah.
Contacted the Washington Post on their tip line, and they've been trying to work her. But she said she didn't want, you know, the attention.
Of course she didn't.
Yeah, and now she has the attention. She's well-respected in her community, a published professor at Palo Alto University, and also does some work at Stanford. And she even, in August, talked to an attorney who's known for sexual harassment cases, Deborah Katz. And Katz believed Ford, but she took a polygraph test administered by a former FBI agent, and the results provided to the Post concluded that Ford was being truthful when she talked about what happened to her and who did it to her. Is it possible, Bruce, that there were two other guys from other prep school that might have done this to this woman?
Always a possibility, but I doubt. I mean, her story sounds plausible to me. But it's interesting because even never Trumpers who are always looking for a way to get Trump, a guy like Tom Nichols, I don't know if you follow him, Charlie Sykes, these guys are having trouble hanging Brett Kavanaugh on the basis of something that he did when he was 17 years old, especially
youthful indiscretion,
especially if there's no subsequent deleterious actions. I mean,
I love deleterious actions. That was the name of my junior high band. But here's the thing. He categorically, denies. He said, I categorically and unequivocally deny this allegation. I did not do this back in high school or at any time. And the classmate, Mark Judge, says he has no recollection of that. 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. My only point of contention with this whole thing, because I did something stupid in high school when I was 15 and let stupid things happen to me. And I remember exactly where I was. I remember whose house I was in. I remember how I got there, and I remember how I got home. So her saying that
traumatic
she doesn't
events.
Remember whose house it was,
yeah.
She doesn't remember how she got there. She doesn't remember how she got home. That's not sitting well with me.
Yeah.
Let's go to Bob, who joins us from Waukegan. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm okay. This is a bunch of hooky. The Democrats will do anything they possibly can to derail a good guy. If you go back in any of our histories to when we were 14 to 18 years old, you will find that every one of us screwed up and did something stupid. But we are not the same person now that we were then. I think we should just take right now we should go ahead with the nomination, and then we should take background checks on every congressman and senator and have every high school girl they ever dated or every high school guy they ever dated come forward and give us all the information. And if something is hairy, they should all resign.
Hey, Bob, What about Keith Ellison? There's documented evidence
He pinned his girlfriend,
to the bed. There's nothing that happens to him.
I'm not talking about Keith Ellison. He's a left-wing nut job from the get-go. Something ought to happen to him. But to bring this up at the last hour when they had all the information months ago is bull hockey. This is the Democrats always do this crap.
Thanks, Bob. You know what? I was wondering, sorry for cutting you off, but we got to move on to other callers. I was wondering, too, could this woman be a Democratic plant? Was Anita Hill a Democratic plant?
I doubt it.
To derail Charles Thomas's nomination? Remember that? I mean, Anita
Clarence's.
Hill has been replaced now.
Here's the thing. I mean, I'll take the Occam's razor approach. I mean, the simplest explanation is it's true, but Yeah, as Grassley notes, Dianne Feinstein had ample opportunities since July. There were so many hearings, so many procedures in which she could have brought this up and did not bring this up if it was so relevant, it was so important. But they didn't because, you know, it's a Hail Mary, and it may work.
Well, Anita Hill, law professor at University of Oklahoma, she was credible. I don't know if you believed her or not. And this woman's a professor at Palo Alto, published. She also works at Stanford.
You know who was more credible than Anita Hill? The evidence is overwhelmingly better for this case than Anita Hill. Juanita Broderick. And what happened with Juanita Broderick? It was deep sixed. And you know who deep sixed it? Tom Brokaw of NBC News. Didn't run the Lisa Myers interview during the impeachment hearings. So please don't tell me about how pure the Democrats are about this.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. Let's go to Chip, who joins us from St. Charles.
Hey, are we going to stop the wheels of government every time a California college professor has a psychotic episode? You know, what did this woman go on to do when she was 17, 18, or 19 years old? You know, how much heroin and methamphetamines did she do and drinking? And
well, that was all because of this incident. She was traumatized.
And that wasn't looked into. I agree with the other caller. This is bull hockey. And it's just typical for the Democrats because they're desperate.
I had never heard of the term bull hockey. Thanks so much.
Well, because you can't say
horse pucky. I've heard.
Thanks, Chip. Let's go to Frank, who joins us from St. Charles. Frank.
Hey, good morning. Would it surprise anybody that this good Christian man actually assaulted her back then, and now he's calling her a liar? I mean, who knows what really happened, but it wouldn't surprise any of us if, you know, he did it back then, and he's calling her a liar now. That's just the way the game's played.
It's possible. Mm. It's possible.
He just seems like such a good guy, and I just feel bad
people
for
change.
Him and his family. I mean, I'm sure they had a horrible weekend, and he's also a coach of girls' basketball
well,
team.
He
may explain this to his players.
And well, you know,
oh,
that
it just gets so bad.
You notice one Democratic operative noted earlier
what?
That Kavanaugh has a tendency to hire female clerks. They were trying to pin him with
oh my
this
gosh.
Kind of stuff
well,
before
and then
that.
Also, they're calling for him to be charged, some Democratic lawmakers.
Isn't there a statute
charged
of
with a crime? Yeah, but they don't read into the law.
Well, you can charge him with it. Then he's got to raise it as an affirmative defense.
Oh, I love affirmative defense.
That was the name of your band your senior year in high
exactly.
school.
Exactly. I was a backup singer. John in Palatine. Good morning, John.
Hi, Amy. Hi, Bruce. Listen, I'm not sure if I'm understanding the whole story correctly. But I was just trying to count the people in the room, if you will. Was it just Ms. Ford, the professor, Kavanaugh, and his friend, or was there a third person who jumped in and supposedly knocked all three? Because then you have more than two people confirming the story. And the other thing is we have a whole lot more evidence against the Pope and. They still nominated him. He's the Pope.
I agree about the Pope. Yeah.
Good point, John. And that's true because she told her therapist that there were four guys, and she told the Washington Post that there were two
but
guys,
she
just
said that
Kavanaugh and his friend Mark Judge.
She said the therapist made a mistake in taking down the note. She said there were four people at the party, only two people in the room. Well, the therapist isn't a news reporter.
Four people at the party, two people in the room?
Four boys at the party. Two boys in the room. The therapist is taking down chicken scratch notes, and, you know, people like David French are making a big deal out of it. And, you know, you're going to have him on the show tomorrow, and I would vivisect him over that.
Holly in Hudson. Good morning, Holly. How are you?
Hey, good morning. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you, Holly.
Hey, I have 100 things to say, but I'll be brief. I hope it is true, because I think we don't need Supreme Court justices who didn't lead a real American life. Second, I think
Holly's in favor of the assault. Okay,
I
go
am
ahead.
Totally in favor of the assault. It happened to me four times a weekend growing up in Albuquerque. Every girl in the 80s. But here's the thing: what do you think the time was that this took? The incident that she's explaining, at least in my experience, would have taken about 90 seconds. This was teenage hijinks, and she is basically. Used it to justify her crappy life. She has been unhappy. She said it derailed her. Well, if something that took probably less than 2 minutes like that could derail her life, she's a wimp.
Well, it doesn't take that long to have her life.
I loved what you were tweeting.
Thank you. Then she's in marriage therapy in 2012, and it comes down to, well, she probably can't stay in the marriage because when she was 15 in 1982, somebody jumped on the bed and had a little fun for 90 seconds. This is why I hate women. This is, Amy, you're the exception.
This is why I have no friends.
This Holly, is why I have no friends.
Holly,
correct.
You know I love you. Holly, it took JFK's life to be only 3 seconds to be derailed. Here's the thing. I do agree with you, though. John Podhoretz tweeted yesterday, and it's really good, that, you know, if you look at the culture around the time in 1982, Revenge of the Nerds was out at that time. There's this relationship between Lewis and Betty in there, which is pretty similar to what happened here, and it's just described as raunchy fun. So, I mean, we looked through the, you know, the current prism of Me Too. Not that it was good to do back then and it's not good to do now, but I mean,
well, I think the problem is too, she said he put his hand over her mouth.
A lot of stuff.
And she thought, quote, that he was inadvertently going to kill me. Larry in Bartlett. Good morning, Larry.
Hey, good morning, Bruce and Amy. Actually, I have two thoughts. One, if the Democrats get away with this, you can bet that this will happen to every federal judge appointment, every appellate judge, and any other future Supreme Court judge. And then the second point, I'm more than a little bit annoyed at both you and Bruce, because you've both said probably a dozen times that both boys were stinking, stumbling drunk. You don't know that. She didn't say that herself, only once. So why do you guys keep repeating you think is just an assumption?
No, no, no,
you're not being
that.
Any more fair
Excuse
than
me.
One you're accusing everybody else of.
Excuse me, I'm not done here. Here am I, Dan Proft. No, she said that they were stumbling drunk.
But Larry is saying, why should we assume?
She said. Why right. she said
and she
said,
also said she had one beer, which means she had
drinking at all. So how can you assume they were?
Larry,
they weren't there. They claim that they weren't there.
You guys accused them of drinking.
No, I didn't, Larry. I said,
you and Bruce have
Larry,
both said they were stumbling
Larry,
drunk.
May I?
You never said
okay. Larry,
you
bye-bye,
accused
Larry.
Them of
Larry,
being stumbling
Larry,
drunk.
We're going to hang up on you and just listen to what we said.
Larry slandered me.
No, no, no.
Because he said that I said that. That they were drunk. I didn't say that they were drunk. I said that she said that they were drunk.
She
and they said, that they weren't even there.
She said that his friends, quote unquote, both stumbling drunk, corralled her into a bedroom. And she also told her mom that she had what? Oh, not her mom, her therapist.
One beer.
One beer. Which, you know, and when you're 15, one beer is really
four beers. For
purposes
of a motion for summary judgment here in the court of public opinion, we have to assume that all of the allegations are true. But does that still mean she has a case? I say he was 17. It was a horrible thing to do. He's lived an exemplary life since then. Put him on the court.
Text message. I agree with Amy. I remember where, down to the wallpaper, who, when, and where, and it was 52 years ago.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Breaking news to report right now on CNN is Deborah Katz. She's the attorney for Christine Blasey Ford, and she is saying that her client will testify before Congress. So I can't imagine they're going to have to push back Thursday's Senate vote, don't you think?
It seems like it. Unless they do it like today.
You'll hear from her as soon as we can turn it around and give it to you.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Tickets for Freedom Summit Chicago are on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
So we're staying on the Kavanaugh story all morning long. The accuser's lawyer just on CNN, Deborah Katz is her name, and she said that her client is willing to publicly testify before Congress. Has not been reached out by any lawmakers yet to do so. But she made that announcement about 3 minutes ago, letting everyone know that her client is available. And then she asked her, too, does your client want to block the nomination of Kavanaugh? And she said, no, she doesn't have a position on it. She just wants the Senate to do their job.
Well, Lindsey Graham said yesterday that he wanted to hear from her. Jeff Flake said he wanted to hear from her. I'm sure the Democrats.
Bob Corker wants to hear from her. But Senator Grassley, who's a leader there, and said he's not. He's questionable about the timing. Doesn't sit well with him.
Well, it shouldn't sit well. I mean, it was terribly botched by Dianne Feinstein, and she had ample opportunity to bring this up. And now, you know, it's basically a Hail Mary pass by the Democrats. So that stinks to high hell, that whole thing. But the question is did this actually happen? And
a couple of questions that you have to ask are the extremely relevant questions are, why didn't you tell anybody about this after it happened? Girlfriends usually talk among themselves after it happened. And why can't you name where the place was or when it happened? Because people remember the details of traumatic incidents like that. So those are the two big questions that have to be asked. Also, I would ask the hypothetical question, if Judge Kavanaugh were in favor of upholding Roe versus Wade, would you have even sent this letter to Dianne Feinstein? And I have my doubts about that.
And she sent the letter. When did she send? So she left a tip on the Washington Post tip line, and then they've been trying to work her for a long time. She lives out in California. I know they had a reporter fly out there and try to get her to tell her story, but she said she always wanted to remain private until over the weekend there was somebody from BuzzFeed at her door. A reporter from another publication was knocking on her door, and that's when she realized, you know what, I'm going to own this story. I'm going to own it.
Well, maybe, I mean, and this is looking at the evidence in a light most favorable to her, maybe she felt that if she gave the tip, that they would take it together with a whole bunch of other tips that they had and use it. But they don't have any other tips. This is not like Roy Moore. They don't have anything else. They don't have subsequent actions by Brett Kavanaugh. And it's going to be a he said, she said. And so I don't even see the reason for hearings over this. Let's get on with the vote. It's been a circus already.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, between what Cory Booker, his aha moment, I got you moment, this whole thing's been just a complete fiasco. But then you have Lisa Murkowski. You just need one Republican, one, to flip or change their mind.
If there are more questions that need to be asked and answered, then I think it would be appropriate to allow for that time.
Now, there's also, and you know, a lot of perhaps irrelevant things come out, but and we're just fielding this stuff as it comes in. I've seen on Twitter this morning that apparently Judge Kavanaugh's mother is a judge herself, and
yeah,
she
mentioned her too. What a wonderful judge she was, and that's why he into the profession that he did, because of his mother.
She presided over a case in which Christine Ford's parents apparently were the defendants in a house foreclosure case. So, I mean, does she have it in for that reason? I mean, you know, maybe the problem is that it's everything's open right now.
But
you
has anybody ever done something stupid in high school? 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I'm sure, Bruce, you were perfect, an exemplary child.
Actually, I mean, when I saw Kavanaugh himself, he appears to be like a nerdy kind of guy.
Right.
So now you think of him, oh, boy,
stumbling
he was actually
drunk.
And I'm thinking to myself, gee, I never got stumbling drunk in high school. We didn't drink in 19. I was one of the good kids in high school. I didn't do that at all because I went. I'm a lot older than Kavanaugh.
You didn't drink in high school? Oh, I mean, of course I didn't either. For any of my teachers that are out there,
you didn't even experiment or have a beer. I went to high school in the late '60s, early '70s.
Did people drink back then, or did they smoke pot?
The greasers did on Mulford Street. The guys who wore the black pants and the white shirts, and they smoked. And we thought
you called them greasers.
They were called the greasers.
We called them burnouts, which is so awful. It's so cruel labeling people like that.
But you know, I was like, I didn't want to get anything on my permanent record, like a tardy slip.
Nerd!
Yeah. 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. Let's go to our good friend Candace, who joins us in DuPage. Good morning, Candace.
Thanks for taking my call. Good morning. Okay, I'm really frustrated with Chuck Grassley because I feel like at the end of all these confirmations, there should be a vote. You don't get another 2 weeks to come up with something. That is so dumb. I mean, it's like after all of this, after everything that's going on with the president and Mueller and Spygate, you still don't understand the modus operandi of the Democrat Party. Look at Aaron Schock. Okay, the whole story about his office being decorated was totally bogus. Okay, so, and then look at this guy, the Navy SEAL down in Missouri. They tried to do the same thing with a woman, his ex-girlfriend. Oh, he took pictures. It's all a lie. It's all a smear.
Well,
but wait a minute.
All right.
You don't judge a man
character, man's character by something he did in high school when he's an idiot. Okay?
I agree.
You judge him by his adult life.
I agree.
Okay? So okay. Hold the vote. Hold the line and hold the vote.
I agree with you, Candace.
This is bogus.
All right. Thank you. Deborah Katz, her attorney, thanks for the phone call, Candace, was, as we mentioned, just on with CNN. And you have to ask, what is the end game here? What does your client want?
So what does Dr. Blasey want now? Does Dr. Blasey want Brett Kavanaugh to sit on the Supreme Court or for his approval, his confirmation to be blocked?
That's not what she wants one way or another. She wants the Senate to do what it is constitutionally obligated to do. She's taken this great risk of coming forward. She's a credible person. These are very serious allegations.
This is total bull from a lawyer.
Seriously,
this is lawyer
and she should
talk.
Be treated respectfully during this process. This and unfortunately, at this point, she's already getting a lot of hostile threats and recrimination.
Yeah, right.
And
that is
of course, quite disturbing and unfortunate.
This is lawyer bull jive.
Wow.
This is lawyer bull jive. That the lawyer, of course the lawyer is going to say, all she wants is justice to prevail. She doesn't care that, look, let's not play patty cake. Let's see what the smell test is right here. Oh. She doesn't come out if Brett Kavanaugh is in favor of upholding Roe versus Wade.
So you think she's a Democratic plant?
I think she's probably telling the truth, and
she's got an agenda. But she isn't the wrong guy?
Huh?
I mean, she's telling the truth, but she is the wrong guy.
She may or may not have the wrong guy. I've said that there are questions about her story, but she may actually be telling the truth. But they're not mutually exclusive. She could be telling the truth, and she's got an agenda, and I don't need to listen to the bull jive from her attorney.
Will your client, Christine Ford, be willing to testify in public to the Judiciary Committee?
The answer is yes.
Ooh, the big bombshell.
So tell me the trajectory of her willingness now to go to such a public forum.
Well, you're right. There was a great deal of ambivalence and about whether she wanted to be publicly associated with these allegations. And essentially, that choice was made by her to remain confidential. She asked Senator Feinstein to keep her letter and her allegations confidential, and Feinstein agreed to do that. And that decision was essentially taken away from her as those allegations were leaked. And it resulted in a great deal of pressure from members of the media who knew who she was, who then started really invading her privacy, showing
her
up at Stanford where she teaches.
She puts it out there.
And reading her notes and emailing her and calling her. And she knew that she was going to be... her allegations were going to be outed, and that, in fact, is what occurred. And as a result, she decided to take control of this and tell this in her own voice.
Okay,
first of all, I just burped during her.
Thank you, Poison Grace
filibuster.
First of all, any reporter that knows how to be a journalist, of course, they leave notes for you everywhere. Of course, they go where you work and where you live because they want the story. Her privacy was being invaded. No, a reporter sitting out front of your house. Is called a reporter doing their job.
This is not some rube on the street. This is a professor at Palo Alto.
She's a doctor. Dr. Christine Blasey.
Whatever.
Palo Alto.
How naive is she when she puts something on a tip line or tells the press about something? She actually thinks that she's trying to act like she's the reluctant wallflower. She's being victimized again. She put herself out there. She wanted to get this out. And now, really? I don't want this out. I don't. Oh, I do want it out. Oh, I don't want it out. Of course she wants it out there, and she wants to bring down Kavanaugh. Now, does that mean that she's not telling the truth? No, she may be telling the truth about this, although there are questions about it. But please stop with that she doesn't have an agenda. Of course she's got an agenda.
Paul in Lake Forest, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning. Another great show.
Thanks.
Bruce, you're a lawyer. What's the first rule of law? The law does not believe in coincidence. Okay. Oh, look at this. Another coincidence. Right when we find out that Feinstein's been leaking secrets to China so her husband can make 500 mil, she comes forward with something else to distract us. They try to distract us from the soft coup. They try to distract us from what Billary did. Enough's enough. Enough is enough. Get this thing going. Get him approved, and let's move on. And please, people, go out in November and vote these losers down.
I agree, Paul.
Has to be stopped.
You know, there actually is part of me that wants to see the Kavanaugh nomination defeated. because
why? I don't.
The part of me is that because this is going to cause such a groundswell of hatred that the Republicans are going to come out in November and make sure that the House stays in Republican hands, and because you don't get away with this. You don't get away with this garbage right now. The guy was 17 years old.
And she was 15. Let's go to Megan on the South Side. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning, Amy and Bruce. I just want to say, Amy, you're a reporter. Don't you think that somebody got to her? Look at what happened to Jim Jordan, for example. They scrub into his past from 40 years ago. They find some guy to say some, lies for money. I think somebody got to her, a reporter, somebody found out about her parents' story against the mother, went and got to her and told her she would be kept confidential, and then that wasn't able to happen.
Wait a minute. It's worse than that, Megan. She volunteered. She put herself out there. This is worse than that.
She contacted the Washington Post.
She contacted them, and now she's pretending she's the wallflower that doesn't want this to be public.
I don't think that
things are mutually exclusive. I think it probably happened. She might be exaggerating the incident. Remember, this is 1982.
She's 15 years old. And
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Well, thanks, Megan, for the... Oh, yeah. What else, Megan?
Well, and back to Amy, what you said about doing stupid things in high school. I had some stupid boys in high school, and I'll tell you right now, I couldn't remember the exact things that they did and said and all that. Anyway, thank you.
All right, thanks, Megan. See, I can remember everything because everybody has a youthful indiscretion, but I remember whose house I was at, and I remember how I got there, and I remember how I got home. So her saying she didn't know whose house she was in, she doesn't remember going there or coming home.
It doesn't seem like it was that traumatic to her at the time. That's what's interesting. Well, because otherwise you'd remember where you were and when it happened. And you would have told somebody about it.
She's a published professor. She's established in her community.
I think she decided later that it was traumatic.
We got a great text message. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Hey, guys, her description of what happened is straight out of Back to the Future, where Marty McFly. Where is Marty McFly when you need him?
Is there a scene like that? I know there's a scene in Revenge of the Nerds like this, which John Hodhoritz brings out. It shows that was just a raunchy, fun comedy.
Why did they have their bathing suits on, too? She said he was grinding her. He pinned her to the bed, was grinding.
She had clothes her, on
and then she
over
had
bathing suit.
Yeah, that he tried to take off her one piece suit and the clothes on top of it.
Well, yeah, she had her bathing suit on underneath.
Yeah, but I'm saying,
were
they at a pool party? Well, why was she wearing her bathing suit?
You don't know what I'm just resisting saying.
I know,
right now.
But thank
you.
God.
Know what I was going to say right
nothing.
Now?
Nothing. We're going to take Marty
about a bathing
who
suit?
Joins us from Naperville. Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. We all want to know is when is her book coming out?
Oh, yeah.
When is the book coming out?
I know. Anita Hill's published a few books, right?
When the day that Steve Bartman's book comes out.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marty, for the phone call. Let's go to Mike, who joins us from the North Side. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, kids. Thanks for taking my call. We've all done stupid things when we were teenagers. I was told by the Trump administration that I couldn't get on the Supreme Court. Because after a rugby game, I was naked on the bar singing, "I'm a little teapot." But I think if you really, Bruce, if you really want to defend this guy, what you should do is you should come out with a claim that he made a homosexual advance against you. He was gender confused, and if the Democrats go against them, then they're homophobic. Then they have to drop all this.
Boy, you're spinning me around. I'm a little dizzy right now, but I get. Look, I don't want to diminish the severity of what actually happened to her, if it did happen to her. But okay, the guy's led an exemplary life since then. No,
he's a basketball coach for little girls.
This is the Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Monday morning, Amy Jacobson in here. And hello, and I do speak English. Bruce Wolf sitting in for Dan Proft.
I'm out there. You're in here.
I'm in here. Yes. Well, I'm just, rattled and
sure.
nerves rattle because of this Kavanaugh.
Keep yourself steady here.
Stuff that's, yes, it's going to be a long slog, and we've just, you know, been told by her attorney that she's willing to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and she's waiting for a lawmaker to reach out to her. To ask her to come and testify at the Hill.
Lindsey Graham said yesterday he did want to talk to her. I think maybe they do it. Can they do it behind closed doors, closed session?
No. Her attorney says she wants to do it publicly. And that's what, just like Anita Hill.
She was such a wallflower just a couple of minutes ago. Now she has to do it publicly. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
Move over Anita Hill. And we'll get to that later in the show. And also, Ken Starr's going to be here at 8:08. I'm going to be changing into my blue dress. What are you going to wear?
Ken Starr can interview Brett Kavanaugh, who could say, I did not try to have sex with that woman. Maybe. What am I going to wear? Yeah.
No, we'll talk about the Manafort, Paul Manafort taking a plea deal and what it means for the Trump administration.
What's interesting is there's a scare every day for the Trump administration, and it usually doesn't come through. Remember, the big talk was when Manafort made the plea deal. Oh, he's going to flip on Trump. But now it doesn't seem like he's going to flip on Trump. It seems like that, as Andy McCarthy wrote in National Review, had Mueller actually wanted to get the goods on Trump, he had Gates, who was the guy who flipped on Manafort. He already had the info from Gates. This has not been done for that purpose, but that it doesn't seem like anyway. So it appears to be yet another hopeful thing by the Democrats that didn't pan out. But now the latest thing is the Kavanaugh deal.
Right. And this morning, President Trump has not tweeted a word about Kavanaugh. What's he tweeting about? You said
U.S. Steel. U.S. Steel.
Kind of off topic there, President Trump. A little bit.
But what I'm reading on Twitter anyway is that the White House is prepared to attack her. This isn't going to be pretty.
This is going to get ugly.
Because it's very difficult. You've got to be delicate about attacking somebody who might actually have a plausible story. There are two big questions, though. It's hot, as you've been saying all morning. If you've been traumatized, you usually remember where and when it happened, if it was such a traumatic incident. And she doesn't remember where and when it happened. But otherwise, it's possible that it happened.
Well, let's talk about Paul Manafort for a while. Former campaign chairman for 5 months. He's now cooperating with Mueller and the Russian probe. Rudy Giuliani didn't seem fazed. He actually seemed relieved when he was on Fox News Friday night.
I mean, the reality is there was a quote put out by a source close to Manafort that the plea agreement has and the cooperation agreement has nothing to do with the Trump campaign. Quote, there is no evidence of collusion. Now, I know that because I've been privy to a lot of facts I can't repeat. But the reality is no evidence of collusion.
Yeah, just like I'm saying, right, that Andy McCarthy said, the plea deal was done because they don't really need to do anymore. They've already convicted him of one thing. They don't really need to, you know, go through anything else with
him. Do you see what he has to turn over? $22 million in real estate. So he's giving the government 5 of his properties in New York, including an apartment in the Trump Tower, handing over 3 bank accounts and his life insurance policy. This guy had... I mean, he had a $3.2 million home in Soho. He had a great place on the Hamptons and a brownstone townhouse in Brooklyn. I mean, he had all these properties all over.
For all we know, he's going to testify against Podesta.
Well, Alan Dershowitz, who I respect, he's a little more concerned. He says this is bad for the Trump administration.
Manafort, if he was going to make a deal, should have made it before he was convicted. He would have gotten a better deal. And President Trump, if he was going to pardon, he should have pardoned before Manafort agreed to cooperate. So there's not going to be any pardon now. And Manafort has a deal. His sentence will reflect how much cooperation he gives. There is always the risk. You know, a man like Manafort has to walk a tightrope. If he's caught lying, the deal is off.
Yeah, and the deal is, besides handing over all the property, $22 million, there's a cap of 10 years in prison.
He's 69 years old now.
Right, but there's a cap of 10 years. So if he blows the deal, if he lies or caught lying, he can go to jail for a long, long time.
It's bad because he doesn't know what Manafort is saying, and he can't count on Manafort saying only things that the special counsel already knows. And when you don't know what a cooperator is saying, then it's a bad day for you because you're vulnerable and exposed.
A bad day for Trump, Dershowitz is saying, because Dershowitz always emphasizes this, that when they make these deals,
the people who make the deals are ready to compose, that is, make up stories. And as a civil libertarian, he's concerned about that. A guy like Andy McCarthy, though, from National Review, legal expert as well, doesn't look at it quite that way, and does also thinks that prosecutors make deals once they've already got the conviction, and then they'll get leniency. You don't necessarily make it beforehand. So there's a difference among the great legal minds on this.
Yeah, and someone that's been in Mueller's shoes, you know, trying to get agreements from witnesses is Ken Starr, and he'll join us at 8:08.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
So today's a big day. Bill Daley is going to make the grand announcement that he is going to run for mayor. Good idea. Who wants another Daley? 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Because he vowed, he swore that he would never run for public office again. And that happened in 2013. Remember, he entered the Democratic primary against Governor Pat Quinn, but quit abruptly. After just 3 months, walked away.
He was the Vontae Davis of gubernatorial races.
Wouldn't he know then that this might not be
for him? Bored.
Well, no, he's the brains of the family. He really is. I mean, he's the ex-commerce secretary. He's run several businesses, been on many corporate boards.
No, he handed Rahm Emanuel $15 million. This is all one big circle thing, as I'd like to say.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Bruce Rauner and Bill Daley were big businessmen a number of years ago, and guess who?
Former banking executive.
And guess who midwifed a deal between the two of them? Rahm Emanuel. That's how Emanuel got $15 million or whatever it is.
Oh, that
That's
was between Daley and Rauner.
It was between Daley and Rauner. They just walk sashay in and out of government. They make their money. They walk out. They walk in. I mean, and it's the same old plutocracy, as I like to say. And I also like to say that Illinois ain't broke, it's fixed. But
hey, who said that?
I don't know.
So we need another Daley. Yeah, he's 70 years old. Also being the former Commerce Secretary. He was also Chief of Staff to President Barack Obama, succeeding Emanuel.
Right. So
once he left. So
this is absolutely the gateway to a failed mayoral term, or a couple of terms. Because you become the chief of staff, and then you come to Chicago, and you screw the pooch as the mayor of Chicago. So Bill Daley, look, I mean, he's got all the credit in the world, because do you remember that photograph of him in the Situation Room when Osama bin Laden was caught? You can tell that he's the straw that stirs the drink on that whole thing.
He's the guy who
made the orders. I think he had
when
his
Hillary
arms
was
folded.
This, yeah. She was Kavanaugh.
Somebody put their hand up in my mouth. Sorry.
So just this weekend, the Sun-Times had a story about some scam with pension funds that a Daley nephew, Veneco, where we heard that before, was involved in, some risky thing that the city had taken part in.
Rob Veneco? The one who was in jail for 60 days?
I get my Daleys and Venecos.
For accidentally killing somebody?
They're all fungible to me, all these different Daleys. How many years did we have Mayor Richard J. Daley? I mean, he was like from 56 to 76, something like that. And then Richie M. was for 22 years. Why don't we just exhume Anton Cermak while we're at it?
Well, you know, I do have a little bit of breaking news.
Oh.
Over the weekend, somebody came to me and is going to start an exploratory committee to run for mayor. And that's Ronnie Woo Woo.
Oh.
And he said that his slogan was to be changing Chicago one woo at a time.
Sure.
I'm not kidding you. They claim he and his handler, Janet, say that people come up to him all the time. Why don't you run for mayor? Why don't you run for mayor? And did you see the list? The Sun-Times did a great list of breaking down who's running for mayor, who's considering running for mayor, and other potential candidates.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. Kurt Summers is on here. Tom Tunney, who's so worried about parking. Tom Tunney is on the
good
list.
Number 44.
And my alderman, Amaya Pawar, who is not up for reelection. He's resigning his aldermanic post. He's considering running.
See,
Susanna Mendoza, LaShawn Ford, Chewy Garcia that we mentioned.
Zunhai.
But Gary, you know, the biggest concern, I think, for us Paul Vallis supporters, Gary Chico. I think that would be really bad for Paul Vallis if Gary Chico decided to
well,
run.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised that Ronnie Woo-Woo was alive because I always thought that Ernie Banks was Ronnie Woo-Woo. And that when Ernie died, Ronnie went too. That was like his doppelganger. Chewy Garcia deserves to be the mayor.
No, he already has a job. If he doesn't, he has two jobs.
He deserves to be the mayor because Rahm quashed the Laquan video, and but for the quashing of that, Chewy would have beaten Rahm, and he would be the mayor right now, and he could run the city into the ground.
Chewy's not going to win. There's no way. I will see to that. That's not going to happen. No way. Let's go to Spence, who joins us from Mokena. Good morning, Spence.
Hey, good morning, guys. How we doing?
We're doing good. How are you? We're doing well.
Hey, good question. I got a good, I will say this, meaning I really, I've been around the guy a couple of times at some events, but I got a guy that I'm an acquaintance with that's running for mayor. I don't hear anybody talking about it. He's the only Republican running for mayor. His name is William J. Kelly. I wish we would talk a little bit about it because he's got a good past and the guy's a heck of a guy. Needs all the help he can get.
You're a majority of one. Very
Thanks,
good.
Spencer.
Thank you, Spencer. Yeah. Republican's going to win.
William Kelly.
I think Ronnie Woo-Woo will get more
I think Ron, people know who Ronnie Woo-Woo is much more
you know
than they know
the,
who that guy is.
The only scoop I ever got as a sportscaster in all my years was from John McDonough, then president of the Cubs. We had him on an opening day one day, and I said, John, is Ronnie Woo-Woo ever going to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley Field? And he said, Bruce, and I think he made this up on the spot. He said, he's going to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game this year. And he did. And that was the only scoop I ever had in all those years as a journalist.
That's great. Well, I love what Lori Lightfoot said about people entering the race now that Emmanuel's gone. Mm-hmm.
Many of us have been out here for months making our case to Chicagoans. And anybody who decides to jump in and take advantage of today's political news, I think a fair question to ask them is where have they been?
And that's what reporters better do today when Bill Daley makes his announcement. You know, why, you were too scared of Mayor Emanuel so you didn't decide to run. Now you're going to run?
Well, we need, I mean. If
we don't need another Daley.
Well, Vallis is kind of the white candidate. I think that, so.
He's going to get the
Daley
Greek vote.
Bill Daley could be the white candidate.
No, Bill Daley, I'm telling you. People are, there's
I don't know
something
what
as voter fatigue and family fatigue. I'm done. We don't need to have another Daley.
I don't think.
And the fact that he dropped out after 3 months against Quinn. Says a lot.
Well, who would, I mean, you're one of them, who would, you know, the lifelong liberals, as Tom Brokaw might say, who would they support? Because that's the white candidate.
They are seriously looking at Paul Vallis right now, and they're also going to look at Chewy, because he's a progressive. Ooh. and that's pretty much it.
Okay.
They don't really know.
So you might get a coalition of the Hispanics and the white liberals on the lakefront to vote for Chewy Garcia.
All I know is people, this is what I hear, people want to walk down their street and not fear being shot. And this, yes, this happens on the north side in Lincoln Park and in Lakeview because that's been happening. I mean, the place where I get my nails done, three African-Americans walked in with guns drawn at 10:30 in the morning and took everyone's purse and cell phones.
Did you, did you complete the nail job?
No, I wasn't there.
Oh, you weren't there.
But I'm just saying, and that's in Roscoe Village. I mean, that, you know, so that's what people want. They feel safe. They want good schools for their kids. And they're so sick of paying taxes.
In the neighborhood, you're going to lower your property values. You're going to lower your values right there if you start talking about nail salons being invaded. Because that doesn't happen where I live. Okay.
Well, you live near Wisconsin.
Yes.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
All right, so we're taking a break.
Fight with a might so fearlessly, we'll never forget the way you drilled today.
Sean.
With your T-formation,
bear down,
Chicago Bears, and let them know why they're wearing the crown. Yeah, the pride and joy of Illinois, Chicago Bears, Bears down.
Second verse.
Oh, there isn't one.
Hi, Amy Jacobson here. Bruce Wolf, filling in for Dan Prof. Dan can't sing. Like, Dan's lost his head voice, and you still maintained it after all these years. Very proud of you.
Thank you.
And we're taking a break from Kavanaugh and the new Anita Hill to talk about Bears football, because tonight is the home opener against the Seattle Seahawks. And a man who has been at 68 consecutive Bears home openers is the one, the only, Chet Kopick. Good morning, Chet. Hold on.
My gosh, Amy, don't stop. You're on a roll.
Did you like
our... How are you kids doing?
We're doing well. We're doing well. A little busy this morning, so we have to cleanse our palate and talk about something here locally, and that's the Bears. Are you impressed so far with their first game of the season?
Well, I was impressed for the first 30 minutes.
Me too.
Amy, the second half was, the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. That being said, I think Seattle lines up as an ideal opponent for the Bears tonight. Their front seven is very, very weak. They don't run the ball very well. There is no excuse for the Bears not to win this game tonight. The key matchup, obviously, Russell Wilson, the Seattle quarterback, dealing with the linebacking strength of Khalil Mack,
who's
become
him.
Mr. America here in Chicago, and young rookie Roquan Smith.
Yeah, he makes defense fun.
Well,
here's the thing, Chet. Khalil Mack, first half was fantastic. Did he fatigue because he hadn't played, he hadn't been in training camp? Because the Bear defense disappeared in the second half, so I'm a little bit worried about that tonight.
Bruce, that's a great point. I was talking with Dennis McKinnon, good old Silky D, the other day. About the Bears in the second half up at Green Bay. And he was of the opinion that Akeem Hicks was a goner, Leonard Floyd was a goner, and that Khalil Mack lost the motor, and they did. I mean, the fact is, the defense, I mean, you don't give up three touchdown passes. I don't care if Aaron Rodgers is the good Lord himself. You don't give up three fourth-quarter touchdown passes, but they did because they couldn't generate a pass rush on a quarterback who was playing on one leg. This game is huge tonight for this franchise. If they drop to 0-2, we all know what Chicago is all about. If we aren't bitching about Crooked Alderman, what are we bitching about the Bears offense?
And this would be, if you make it to tonight's game, which you are going to make it, it will be your 68th consecutive Bears home opener. Do you remember your first game?
The funny thing is, just Chet claims he's only 57 years old, so I want to know how that works, but go ahead.
So did you go to your first game in diapers?
I went to my first game, I believe, not in diapers. I would have been by then in... Amy, I was wearing a thong.
You're going to go to your last game in diapers, though, Chet. Now, here's the thing.
I want to know about your first game.
I'm going to my game tonight in adult diapers. So the first game I went to would have been in 1951.
Oh.
And tonight will be 68 in a row. My father had a great passion for the Bears. He was very close to George Halas. And, over the years, it just became kind of like a tradition with me. And over the years, I've flown in from New York, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, blah, 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 just to see the Bears open up their season. And Bruce, you will know this, greatest Bears opener of all time, 87.
I was there.
Beating a back-to-back Super Bowl champions. The Bears clobbered the Giants and Phil Sims, 37-19.
Elvis Toast Patterson. That was the one Bear opener I was at. You've been to 68. So Chet, what did you think yesterday? Vontae Davis of the Buffalo Bills quits at halftime. Now, I'm walking out in the middle of this interview right now, but Vontae Davis, he quit the Buffalo Bills at halftime.
Well, he put on his street clothes and walked out the door because in two games they've given up, 48 points?
Know,
and he just said, you know what, I'm done. I'm not fast enough.
But usually you
wait till the game's over.
You give a two-minute warning or something like that. not 2 weeks, but 2 minutes. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No, I haven't, and I think it's absolutely classless. Hmm. It's crass. There was a way to handle this. Meet with the general manager and the owner on Monday and say, listen, guys, I haven't got it. I want to retire. Let's do it with dignity. I want to congratulate my teammates. I want to wish them all the luck in the world. But, just walking out of halftime, I mean,
selfish.
That's as bad as Spiro Agnew with Richard Nixon.
Now, Chet, even worse than what Vontae Davis did yesterday was me and my fantasy league. I benched Ben Roethlisberger.
So bad.
I benched him. He scored 50 fantasy points. And you know who I'm starting in his place? Mitch Trubisky tonight. So is he going to have any kind of game?
I think he does, Bruce. Their secondary isn't all that good. Gosh knows he's got weapons. Here's the thing about Mitch Trubisky. The Bears are going to take the leash off and just let the guy play. Let him call some of his own plays. I like Matt Nagy, but I think he's very much a rookie coach. I think he's, you know, he's been a disciple of Andy Reid, which meant that he held the clipboard for Andy Reid. there's no reason to believe Trubisky tonight shouldn't throw for 250 yards with a couple of touchdown passes, minimally.
Yeah, but he's not going to score 50 fantasy points.
Well, that'll be good, and at least they'll make up some of the deficits.
All right, so Chet, you have a new book out. And the title is Chet on Chet Kopic? Did I butcher that?
Well, Amy, it's
close enough.
Actually, the full and complete title is What the Hell Happened? No.
Chet, give us a little tease. Give us, you know, a story there that we don't know.
Title.
Well, you give us the proper title and your name. But also, you know, give us something in there, you know, to make us want to buy it.
Chet Kopic in Pursuit of Chet Kopic. I'll give you the first chapter. I talk about a meeting with Billy Martin, who was a terrible drinker. And in my 20s and 30s, I was a very, very bad drinker. I was also an only child. A little pathos here, Bruce.
Sure. I got it. I'm crying right now.
Very, very lonely. Yeah. Terribly, terribly lonely. And much like Andy Kaufman in Man on the Moon, would sit and broadcast to the wall and pretend he was Jack Brickhouse or Vince Lilly.
Wait a minute, that's what I did, Chet.
And now, you had 15 brothers and sisters.
No, seriously. I mean, I used to broadcast to the wall. Right, that's what we all did. So what happened with Billy Martin?
Well, Billy Martin had kicked dirt at umpire Terry Cooney in Toronto in 1981. And ironically, the A's, who Billy was managing at that time, were at Old Comiskey Park the next night. So I went out there just determined to get to Billy Martin on the 620 Sports Live. And there was a gaggle of reporters trying to get Billy to talk, and he wouldn't say a word. So I had met Billy before, and I walked up, and I said, Billy, if you'll come on with me, I promise, no talk about Terry Cooney. Mm-hmm. I just want to talk about you. So Billy said, okay, what time? 620. Bruce, he came out. Amy, he came out. I'm not kidding you. I did something like, so Billy, what's new? And he went into a rant about Terry Cooney. It was just explosive. That, and if there's one that brings out a loud passion, it is Halloween night 1983 when I got the call from Sid Luckman from George Halas's apartment over at 5555 Sheridan Road that Coach Halas had passed away. I broke the story live on Channel 5.
Wow.
You remember when I worked at Channel 5 back in 1915?
Chet, please, you got to let things go about Channel 5. Now, me, I will never let
it go. He's wearing an NBC 5 jacket
right
now,
I will never let
Chet.
It go that they let me go at Channel 5, Chet. But you should let it go. But
no, I have let it go. I really have. It, you know,
so have
it was
I.
A great one. I'm still trying to figure out why Channel 5 didn't want me, but instead wanted this handsome, charismatic, olive oil skinned Italian by the name of Marcin Greco, who actually played the role of Johnny Fontaine in The Godfather.
He did. I'll never forget it. He was a damn good singer. He absolutely was.
All right. So the book, I read your first book, Chet Kopic, Laying It on the Line, and I'm looking forward to reading your current book. When's it going to be available? And how
it's
can we purchase
right now,
it?
Amy,
it's available now.
It's available. Listen, I'll sell you a copy right here on the phone if you want.
Sure.
I'll give you the special Kopic discount. No, it's available not through Amazon, but through Eckhart's, Eckhartz Press.com. And the reason I do that is because Amazon rips off authors.
There we go.
Do tell.
Yeah.
All right, Chet, good luck on number 68.
Well, I want to hear about how Amazon rips off authors.
Oh.
No, I'm. Yeah. We'll
not the 68th home opener. May you have 68 more, Chet. And maybe the Bears will win one Super Bowl in that time. So, good luck.
I doubt it.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for having me on. You're doing a wonderful job, and keep on laughing.
All right, thank you.
And good luck on your new book. And Chet Kopic joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Bears, 31, the negative 7.
Yeah, really, negative 7.
Gosh, Nick, I'll find a way.
Bears, stop.
Bears.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Oh, do you know the song, Bruce?
I do now.
Ain't no more tears left to cry. It's Ariana Grande. Okay, it wasn't that bad.
Oh, it was bad. I'm looking at the video. He's grabbing her around her breast. It's
okay,
a side
so here's
thing.
The deal. The news is that Ariana Grande has declined to file a complaint after being touched involuntarily or accidentally by a bishop during the Aretha Franklin funeral. Detroit police were investigating because people called their tip line about inappropriate touching and inappropriate contact.
He's got his fingers wrapped around her brassiere.
Yeah, but it's called the side boob. And when Bishop Charles Ellis was reaching for the side boob, he grazed her breast accidentally.
You don't go for that. You don't grab a woman that high up. There's a certain spot.
You know, she was asking for it because she had on a short dress.
Right, because otherwise you would have gotten her.
No, I did take offense to wearing a V-length mini skirt at a funeral.
You could see the reflection of her thighs in Bill Clinton's eyes.
Well, it was so weird because he had
ogling.
He had Farrakhan ogling there with his pants up to his breasts. I mean, he's got the grandpa pants on big time. So he's sitting there next to Al Sharpton, who clearly has had a stomach tied because he looks anorexic. Next to Reverend Jackson.
Oh, I thought that was Al
next
Roker.
Next to Bill Clinton. Next to the bishop. And the bishop, not only did he side boob her, he made a reference about her heritage.
I've got to apologize because I have to brush up. My 28-year-old daughter tells me, Dad, you are old at 60. When I saw Ariana Grande on the program, I thought that was a new something at Taco Bell. Girl, let me give you all your respect. Did y'all enjoy this icon? She's an icon herself. Come on.
Is the Aretha Franklin funeral still going on?
It was 8 hours, but, you know, she did it her way. She wanted those people up on stage. She wanted Ariana Grande to sing, and Faith Hill sang too, but it was, you know, she was the original diva, so that's how she ended it. But this police investigation is over. Detroit police said, we received some calls from citizens and saw social media posts, and therefore we had to investigate. And the problem, I mean, not the problem, but they had to decide whether or not she was a victim here and if she wanted to press charges, and she has decided not to press charges.
So Ariana Grande actually does have inappropriate touching here. She lets it go. But an event that occurred 35 years ago is going to be resurrected and going to knock out our nominee for the Supreme Court. And then verily I say unto you, if Brett Kavanaugh goes down, Amy Coney Barrett is going to rise up and she's going to be the next Supreme Court justice, and Roe v. Wade will go down the tubes. Sorry, wow. I got the bishop complex.
I see. Yeah. thank you, Justin Kosick, our technical producer.
Are those are the crickets reacting to 8 hours of funeral coverage?
Yes.
Is that what they are?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Amy Jacobson here. Bruce Wolf sitting in for Dan Proft on what has turned out to be a very busy day news-wise. Of course, the Kavanaugh bombshell. And on Friday, bombshell news that Trump's former campaign manager of 5 months, Paul Manafort, is now cooperating with Mueller and the Russian probe. And a man who has been in Mueller's shoes trying to get agreements from witnesses is none other than Ken Starr, and we are honored to have him here on our program. Good morning, Mr. Starr. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much, Amy. Good to be with you.
Yeah, so what was the offer and the deal that Paul Manafort took?
It was to cooperate fully, and by virtue of that, he'll get a reduced sentence on the charges that were filed against him in Washington. Those are different charges than those he was convicted on last month in Alexandria. So Manafort was really in a very precarious, difficult situation. I predicted that he would, in fact, plead if he was guilty, and he did, in fact, plead to these crimes. And the significance of this is Bob Mueller now has, if it happens, the full cooperation of truthful testimony from Paul Manafort. And that's going to be so helpful in getting to the bottom of, was there Russian collusion? Thus far, there's been zero evidence of it, or was there not?
And here's the question. You know, a lot of people were jumping for joy because they thought Manafort's going to flip on Trump. However, Andy McCarthy, you know Andy, of course, a former federal prosecutor, writes for National Review and is on Fox. He has said and has written he finds it hard to believe that Mueller sees Manafort as the key to making a case on Trump. When Mueller's had Richard Gates, Manafort's partner, as a cooperator for 6 months, and you have to figure Gates knows whatever Manafort knows about collusion. Yet since Gates began cooperating with the special counsel, Mueller has filed the charges against Russians that do not implicate Trump and has transferred those cases to other Justice Department components. I know you don't want to speculate too much, but do you think there's Manafort's going to be flipping on Trump?
I think Andy McCarthy's analysis is spot on. Andy is almost always,
right,
along with my former colleague Saul Weisenberg, who was on our team and was himself, as was Andy, a renowned federal prosecutor. Those two guys are almost always right. Nobody has a crystal ball, but it's really strong analysis for the reasons that Andy stated. So, yes, for whatever reason, and I think one thing that I think part of it is that people have not paid enough attention to the two indictments that Mueller did, in fact, bring against Russian individuals and Russian organizations for their skunk works in interfering with our election. Now, you read those two indictments, and guess what? There's not even a suggestion, not even a hint of collusion with the Trump campaign. In fact, to the contrary, one of the indictments has a very intriguing paragraph that just shows what the Russians were after was upsetting the election, upsetting the American people, getting us mad at one another. Because that one paragraph said on the very same day, these Russian thugs financed both a pro-Trump rally in New York and an anti-Trump rally in New York on the bloody same day.
Yes.
So the bad guys in this drama thus far are the Russians.
Now, a lot of people criticize Mueller. They say, you know, this is an endless investigation and it's, you know, it's not going in what its original raison d'etre was about. The same criticism was leveled at you.
Yes.
And you've written a book called Contempt. And, for example, there's this star prosecutor, Bruce Udall, who told Slow Burn, a Slate podcast, that the Monica Lewinsky case should have been dead on arrival and it served no useful purpose. Your response to that?
Well, I like Bruce, but he's wrong. He was involved in the investigation and then left the investigation. He was the target of very vicious attacks from the Clinton White House. But I disagree, and frankly, everybody else on the team did, including people who were renowned federal prosecutors, two of whom had won the Justice Department's highest award. But the facts are the facts, and what I think the book is trying to show about this particular point is that was that part of the investigation, the Lewinsky phase of the investigation, was authorized by the Attorney General of the United States. So if it's dead on arrival, then it should have been pronounced dead on arrival by the Attorney General appointed by Bill Clinton, but she couldn't as a matter of honor, as a matter of ethics, as a matter of law, turn a blind eye to the President of the United States committing perjury and obstruction of justice.
Wow. So the book, I think, proves that Bill and Hillary Clinton weren't victims of so-called vast right-wing conspiracy. Didn't they play fast and loose with the law and with facts and think that they were above the law?
Thank you, Amy. Absolutely. One of the things that I think the book demonstrates, and what I've said is I think any fair-minded person who reads the book will come away and say, I don't know whether the president should have been impeached or whatever, but they will conclude that there were very reasonable grounds to believe, quite apart from the Lewinsky case and what happened in impeachment, is that both Bill and Hillary were more likely than not guilty of crimes in the Arkansas phase of the investigation, as well as perjury on Hillary's part. But there's a difference between, and every prosecutor will say this, there's a difference between what I know and what I can prove. And that's a great protection to the American people. We don't want prosecutors going into court unless they know in advance they're going to be able to win that case, right? Or they should be able because they've got the evidence. In Hillary's case, we had missing documents and we had missing witnesses. And you just can't overcome that. So we seriously considered indicting Hillary, or I should say presenting the indictment to a grand jury in Little Rock. But we felt that we did not have enough evidence, especially because of missing witnesses. We did not have the full cooperation of Webb Hubble. We thought we were going to get more out of full cooperation from Jim Guy Tucker, who is our source. So here's another echo for the present day. Governor Jim Guy Tucker was our Paul Manafort. We convicted him in trial number one. He was indicted under a separate indictment for other crimes, and then he ended up pleading guilty. We think he was truthful with us in cooperating with us. However, what he had simply, again, was not sufficient to go to prove that Bill and Hillary were committing crimes in terms of the financing of the Whitewater deal.
Circling back to Manafort, Alan Dershowitz, civil libertarian, defense attorney, is always concerned about this, about guys who are looking for a deal and that they have the pressure.
Well, he said that he should have made a deal at the beginning.
Well,
spared himself some time in jail.
But they have the pressure to compose, and so that he'll start making stuff up. I mean, what's your view on that?
Yeah, listen, I have the greatest respect for Alan. Alan looks at the world through the lens of a criminal defense lawyer and civil libertarian, as you said, Bruce. I'll just say this. If the prosecutor is trying to get the witness, here, Paul Manafort, to compose, then the prosecutor is a rogue, unethical prosecutor. And I don't think Bob Mueller is that. I think he's a truth guy. He's an honor guy. He's Semper Fi, a Marine Corps. Now, again, I've expressed concern about some of the people around Bob Mueller. But in terms of Mueller's judgment, I think he's going to give it his best, honest shot, as opposed to, hey, let's see if we can get this guy to kind of frame the story and shape the narrative our way. What we used to say to witnesses is, hey, we can deal with the truth, whatever it is, whether it inculpates, exculpates, doesn't matter. We just want the truth. What we cannot deal with are lies.
And speaking of lies, the big news this morning is that Kavanaugh's alleged accuser has come forward and has, you know, written a letter to Dianne Feinstein's office, has now the FBI has it. They haven't moved on it yet. But what do you make of all of this? I mean, coming, you know, on the 3 days before the Senate Judiciary Committee is supposed to take a vote.
Yeah, the process, of course, raises fundamental issues of fairness to the process. Why was this not brought forward by Senator Feinstein? Why did the person not come forward? But here's my basic point. I believe Brett Kavanaugh, because I've known him for many, many years, going back to 1994. I worked alongside him. He is a person of great integrity. He adamantly denies that this ever happened. And so it's going to be, and so does the other person who apparently was involved in this alleged episode. Likewise, I know of no corroboration of it. So I believe Brett Kavanaugh because I think he's a man of great honor, and I think the process of bringing this forth at the 11th hour plus raises very serious questions of fairness to the process.
Can I just try to argue with Ken Starr? It would be an honor to actually do that, Your Honor. You should have been on the Supreme Court yourself. The problem is, you know, I read the story, and there are problems with the story because she doesn't remember where and when it happened. And usually with a traumatic incident like that, you would remember a detail like that. But on the other hand, there does seem to be a plausibility. You know, she didn't claim rape. She said, you know, this is what happened and nothing more. The two guys were stumbling drunk. It's possible they don't even remember the incident because they were so drunk. I mean, there's a possibility it's more likely than not that she's telling the truth, even though she may have an agenda and Feinstein screwed the pooch on this and all that.
She might have the wrong prep school boys.
But I mean, she probably could identify him. I mean, don't you think it's a possibility that it's more likely than not she's telling the truth?
Well, anything is possible, but given the fact that Brett has, I'm sorry, I should call him Judge Kavanaugh, has denied it. But the other thing is, look at, and I don't want to get into the merits and how you weigh it, I'm not a United States senator, but here is an alleged episode from high school.
I know.
High school,
I know.
And now it is decades later with this exemplary career. Here are all these high school young women from his high school days, who've come forward with this letter.
Well, Judge Starr, I mean,
65 of them. I like the letter.
But you know, Judge Starr, you can always get people who weren't assaulted to testify to how good he is. We're talking about this particular incident. And I'm not saying, I kind of agree. I agree with you. I mean, he was only 17 years old, but assuming,
allegedly,
arguendo, as the lawyers say, that it's true. I mean,
it's a good word.
Well, there you go. I'm glad I taught you something right here.
He's no, been practicing I don't think all I did. Weekend.
Right, all my legal Latin. No, here's the thing. I mean, you've got to look at the four corners of what happened right here, and there is a plausibility to her story. Even assuming it's true, yeah, cut him a break because he's had an exemplary life after that. But that's different from the actual story itself. No,
you should be judged from college and on. High school indiscretion.
The story itself. I'm trying to get you to admit that the story is plausible.
Well, I'm not going to admit that. Yeah. And the reason I'm not going to admit it is that I love this man who has served with such integrity for so many years in so many different positions, tough positions. He did not ever bend the rules during my long experience with him of several years, always upright. And so he said it did not happen.
So,
and
you're you admit that you're biased, isn't it true,
no,
Judge Starr?
To stop
you called him
Brett.
You're absolutely biased. I want to exercise one of my peremptory challenges, and you're off.
So how long have you two known each other, and how close are you? I mean, have you talked to him about this? Because this must be traumatic on his family and his daughters.
Course,
I mean, I feel awful
horrible.
For them.
It's just absolutely horrible. 6 full FBI investigations. Many positions of honor and trust in the United States government, 6 over many years. And now this comes out 3 days. I know it popped up in July, but then the real concern I have, quite apart from, yes, I believe Brett Kavanaugh, I'll get a bumper sticker to that effect. If he denies it, I'm with Brett Kavanaugh because I know him. I know him. I don't know this person. She obviously has a record of professional accomplishment and so forth. But I want to know why at the 11th hour, 3 days before, then it pops up. There's a fairness to the process that I think is just profoundly concerning to any fair-minded person, as opposed to someone who just says, oh, I don't care. It could have come out after the vote. They should reconsider the vote. No. You know, in the law, hey, Bruce, no laughing.
this is serious.
I object to your objection to my laughing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You're good.
I agree with you. I agree with you that, you know, so he was only 17 years old at the time, and he's led an exemplary life, and he should be on the court. I totally agree with you. I was just trying to look at the incident itself.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
I let you off the hook, Judge Starr.
Hey, we agree. He should be on the court.
Absolutely.
Yes. The book
I'm
is
with Ken Starr.
The book is Contempt, a memoir of the Clinton investigation. Ken Starr, an honor to have you on, and you're welcome back anytime.
Thanks, Amy. Thank you, Bruce.
And Ken Starr joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Wow, I think Ken Starr likes you.
I think you guys are going to start becoming Twitter friends. Well, you know, when you can speak the legal Latin with a guy.
Then you got it in there.
Res ipsa loquitur. Yeah, Ken Starr was fun.
I started reading it over the weekend. I only got to page 43, but I tried. And it's going to be a fascinating read. I'm going to finish this book. Dan always tells me I need to read more, which I
haven't read a book in years. I can't read more than a tweet. I can't.
I can't read more.
I even quit in the middle of a tweet. I'm like Vontae Davis. I can't even do anything anymore.
Do you have ADD?
What? I can't do it anymore.
I can't wait for the Bruce Wolf album, Starry, Starry Decisis.
Oh.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Van Gogh. Try the other ear.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. No, what was the last book you read?
I tried to read Infinite Jest.
Don't say it was a pop-up book.
I read like 200 pages of every book, and then I quit.
Really?
Yeah, Infinite Jest, I tried to read. It's horrible. I can't read
it. If you made the commitment to read the 200 pages.
It's 1,000 pages. Forget about it. It has footnotes. It's ridiculous.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Amy Jacobson here. Bruce Wolf in for Dan Proft on this busy Monday morning. We've talked about Kavanaugh. We've talked about Manafort and the big announcement today that Bill Daley is going to be throwing his hat into the ring for mayor of Chicago, as if we haven't suffered through enough dailies. You know,
if he throws his hat into the ring, it'll show his bald spot. I don't think he wants to do that.
So bad.
He should wear a fedora.
Yeah, so that announcement will be coming later today. I can't wait to hear reporters' questions asking him why he waited until Mayor Emanuel dropped out of the race. But somebody else running for mayor is former police superintendent Gary McCarthy, who was fired by Rahm Emanuel and has now decided to try and take Mayor Emanuel's job. And joining us on our turnkey.pro answer line is Bernard Carrick, who is the former NYPD commissioner. He's now the author of a new book, The Grave Above the Grave. Good morning, Mr. Carrick. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. So I'm putting you on the spot here. Do you know Gary McCarthy? Because he used to work in New Jersey and I believe in New York.
Yeah, he actually used to work for me, and he was at one time my son's boss because my son worked in Newark as a cop. So I know him pretty well.
All right. So are you supporting him for mayor of Chicago?
I would support him for mayor of Chicago. I think, you know, if anybody knows what has to be done in Chicago, it's him. Look, Chicago has a number of problems besides crime, you know, the poverty, the socioeconomic stuff, the racial divide, all this stuff, the guns, the violence. Listen, at the end of the day, none of the poverty stuff, none of this community cleanup is ever going to happen if you don't reduce crime. And I know that because New York City was four times as bad pre-Giuliani. And nobody's going to come to Chicago and build businesses, open businesses, create jobs, create new housing. Nobody's going to do any of that if they don't feel safe. And so the key number one thing for Chicago has to be reducing violent crime and murder. You reduce the crime. For every percentage point we reduce crime in New York City, I could show you increases in economic development, real estate value, tourism, less welfare rolls. The crime is going to be the answer to fixing Chicago, reducing crime. And nobody knows that better than Gary.
Well, what about the broken windows policy? Explain to people what the broken windows policy is.
The broken windows policy is basically addressing crime in your communities from bottom up, top down. In other words, everything counts. You know, in New York City, we had people paying $5-6 million for a brownstone in lower Manhattan and would have to wake up in the morning to graffiti, people urinating on the sidewalk, you name name it. And nobody ever touched these people. Nobody did anything to them. Nobody held them accountable until Giuliani came in. And Giuliani said, look, you want a society that respects law. You want a society that's clean. You got to clean this stuff up. And that's what we did. And like I said, Chicago's no different. Chicago could be a major booming city, and this country should be, but you're never going to get there. It's never going to change if you do not reduce crime and the violent crime and the guns and the murder. It's never going to change.
Now, here's the thing. I couldn't agree with you more on broken windows, and I think Gary McCarthy was a good police superintendent. The problem is that he sided with the union in the aftermath of the Laquan McDonald shooting, and the trial is just starting right now in Chicago.
Today,
opening statements. And, you know, he I don't see where he'd get the support, because Rahm Emanuel did throw him under the bus, and now Emanuel's under the bus as well. But it just seems like an insurmountable thing for him to deal with, because he just sided with the union story, and the video contradicts that.
Yeah, you know what, guys? I don't know all the politics of Chicago, but here's what I do know. The people of Chicago, the voters, they have to make up their mind. Do they want a cleaner, safer community, or don't they? If they do, if they want economic growth, if they want better real estate value, if they want tourism, if they want to live in a society that's a better society, you have to clean up the crime. You got to reduce it. And I, out of the mayoral candidates that I've seen, and I don't know them all, Gary McCarthy knows how to do that. He did it for me. He did it with me. He did it for Newark, or at least he tried. He had a mayor that wasn't too cooperative. Listen. Their mind.
What I liked about Gary McCarthy when he was superintendent, he was out there. When NATO was here, he was out there with his men, manning the front lines, not just calling the shots from, you know, an office 5 miles away. So I give him kudos for that. Anytime there was a large event, he was on the ground with, you know, his troops, so to speak. Your new book, The Grave Above the Grave, tell us about that.
It's my first novel. I've had two prior bio-type books that did extremely well. I figured I'd throw my hat in the ring for fiction. I've got my time as police commissioner of New York, counterterrorism measures. I was in command of the NYP during 9/11. But I also worked in Saudi Arabia for 4 years. I worked for the King of Jordan for 5 years. I've been around the threats that we face in this country against radical Islamic movements for many, many years. And I put that into a fiction.
Now, I'm fascinated because, as I was talking before the break, I have a hard enough time reading fiction, let alone writing it. And you've written books before, but I mean, I'm dumbfounded. I'm amazed. How do you, be this professional and a very successful one in one area of life, and then all of a sudden you're, the next Hemingway? I mean, this is pretty darn good. It's not fair. It's not fair.
It's funny. I've had this conversation with friends, and they said, it has to be easy to do. You just make up a bunch of stuff. And I have to tell you, it's not easy at all. Writing fiction is extremely difficult because you have to keep things in context. You have to keep things together. You write a description of a character or something about a character, and five chapters in, you want to re-talk about that character. I forget what color of hair he had. What did he look like? Where did he come from? Where did he go to school? And eventually, constantly going back, rewriting things because you forgot. So it's not easy, but the book has gotten really rave reviews, and I'm pretty surprised, but it's come out pretty well.
Now, because whenever I try to write my novel, I get it was a dark and stormy night. That's my first line, and then I can't get past it. And so I just don't know how you even get to the ultimate chapter where you're trying to remember what color the guy's hair was. So, kudos to you on that. I mean, that's amazing.
Thank you.
All right. And then is your book on Amazon? Can we?
So it's on Amazon. It's on, Barnes & Noble. It's all the major bookstores. And most importantly, you can get it online, Amazon Prime.
Okay. And then on the 17th anniversary, can you believe it's already been 17 years?
Just last week.
And what do you do to memorialize those who died and to appreciate and remember those who were the first responders?
Most importantly, I reach out to the people that worked for me on that day, the people that responded. Mayor Giuliani and I actually had a dinner on the night of that night, September 11th, every year. And everyone that was in our administration and actually with us, with me, during the attack, because the mayor and I was actually trapped inside 75 Barclay Street when the second tower imploded. I was on the street, in the middle of the street, when the second plane, when the north side of the tower blew out of the second tower, I was under it. So a couple times there, we had some close calls during that day. So we get together with all of the people that worked with us and for us and try to reflect on that day. And most importantly, here's the one thing I'd like your listeners to understand. On that day, men and women in the New York City Police, the Fire Department, and the Port Authority Police effected the greatest rescue mission in the history of our country by taking 20 to 25,000 people out of those buildings in the surrounding area. But more importantly, they evacuated more than 1 million people out of southern Manhattan into the four boroughs and into New Jersey with the help of the New Jersey State Police.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you so much, Bernard Carrick. We really appreciate you coming on the program. The new book is The Grave Above the Grave, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Come on. You know the song.
I fell asleep during Caddyshack.
What is wrong with you?
We went to see Caddyshack. I must have worked hard that day or something. Fell asleep in the middle of it. Now, I'm always embarrassed to say that because it's a classic.
How could you fall asleep in
So I got that going for
Caddyshack, too, yeah. I could see you falling asleep in.
Sure.
But yeah. Caddyshack? Really?
Yeah.
Guess what movie I fell asleep in?
Godfather?
No, I've never seen Godfather.
You've never seen Godfather?
I know. I'm Amish. I fell asleep during the movie Snatch. Last thing I remember is the dog squeaking. He swallowed a toy.
I don't remember
a squeak
Snatch.
Toy. It was awful. Did anybody fall asleep in Snatch? 312-642-5600. I know Brad Pitt was in it. It was some, I don't know, group of bandits who were stealing something from somebody.
I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Okay. Hi-yo. Hiya.
During Snatch.
Hey, my day is made when I can get Amy to snort. But I bet you do that all the time with Dan.
So I found out that you went golfing with my father.
That's right.
Why are you golfing with my dad?
Because it's there. It's like what Sir Edmund Hillary said about Mount Everest. I played golf with your dad, Harvey.
Yes.
And we played, at the Arboretum course in Buffalo Grove.
He's there every morning.
He was so kind. Well, they know him there. First of all, I paid for my round. Okay.
You paid for
He paid for my round.
Oh, my dad paid for your golf?
Secondly, he fishes out golf balls from the, because it's a water-laden course, so there's lots of golf balls in there. He had fished out two bags of balls, like about 15 in one and about 30 in the other. And some of them were in pristine condition.
Yeah.
So they were great. So I didn't have to buy any golf balls this summer.
Oh.
And some of them, you know, had marks on them, but he separated them into different bags for me. These are the
He's
ones
not
that
anal
you can
retentive
use.
Or anything.
I mean, it was just wonderful. And then he gave me a massage.
No, he didn't.
Okay, that much. He stopped.
Well, how did you play? And how is he?
I wasn't that good. He's a very good golfer.
Oh, he's very consistent.
He wants to get it moving. Reminds me a little of Ditka. You know, Ditka plays golf like polo. Let's move it on, pal. You know how Ditka's saying, take me out to the ball game? You know,
yeah. Take me out to the ball game.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, let's get this going.
12 seconds.
You know, we should have a foursome.
Sure.
Me, you, my dad, and Dan Proft. Wouldn't that be great?
Well, you know, I played golf with Dan Proft, and I got a hole in one when I played with Dan.
It's so awesome.
I mean, he had to suffer and smile and congratulate me for a hole in one. But he is a far superior golfer to me.
Well, I don't.
Dan is much. I play old man golf. Hit it right down the middle. Dan hits it, can hit it all over the place and still birdie a par five. So
do you think? I don't know. Okay, I played golf with him a few times. He's not. He's good. But then if he's off,
surprised
it's,
he deigned to play with a lady.
Off, he's off. I mean, he hits it to the right.
He swings at about 195 miles
well,
an
it's,
hour.
I mean, yeah. If it's going to the right, it'll be not the fairway next to it, but the fairway next to that.
He disheartened me one time because it was a par five. I hit it straight down the middle. I wound up getting a par. He's like playing on the next hole through the entire time, but he gets a par as well because he managed to make a long putt, and that just broke my spirit.
Oh, my God.
That man broke my spirit a lot of times. But God bless him.
You're gonna be
will
okay.
He be back tomorrow to talk to David French about the Brett Kavanaugh?
Yes, he will.
Matter? That yes. Sounds like a good interview.
I know you love David French.
I like Andy McCarthy more.
You do? Okay.
Well, Andy McCarthy's my big guy.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So but yeah, well,
and your dad was a wonderful golfer, wonderful host. So
good.
Let's all get together.
All right, so over the weekend, Hurricane Florence, you know, it was a cruel crawl. I mean, it has been raining there. Hundreds of people had to be rescued. 100 more still need to be rescued. Unfortunately, 18 people have passed away so far from the storm. But one thing that happened on the Weather Channel, I don't know if you saw this, Mike Seidel, I'm a name assassinator. He, you know, he braved the elements.
Okay, picking it up here. In Wilmington, North Carolina, right at the Intracoastal, and we're in one of these bands. This is about as nasty as it's been. We had some bands like this last night, and then the eyewall this morning, we were not on TV. It was a dark and raucous night at the hotel.
And so he seems to be getting blown away by the hurricane.
He's like Marcel Marceau in the wind.
Yeah, he's got one leg forward. He's lunging forward. He's holding on for dear life. Walking back staggering like, I'm in the eye of the storm.
Except right behind him.
What was behind him, Bruce?
Two guys are walking, sashaying, strolling down the street like it's nothing. So I don't know. The juxtaposition was arresting.
Well, it was just so funny because they strolled behind him like, hey, where are we going for lunch? What do you want to do? But the Weather Channel says it's important to note that the two individuals in the background are walking on concrete. Mike Seidel is trying to maintain his footing on wet grass.
And you're walking on sunshine, if you believe that story.
I've been walking on sunshine with you here. Bruce Wolf, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For filling in Monday and Friday. We're going to work on our Christmas song.
Absolutely.
For the week before Christmas.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.